Hello, everyone, and welcome to Travel Bistro. I'm Pam Barker. Thanks for joining me again. I have two guests in today, Deborah Hamilton and Gary Barker. Hey, guys.
Hey, hi. Pam.
We're back for part two of our trip to French Polynesia. I hope you listened to the first one. If you didn't, be sure to find it and listen to it. I hope you will. Please. Thank you. Today, guys, we're going to talk about shore excursions, I think, right?
Right.
Yes. Part two.
Part two. So let's kick it off, Gary.
Yes. Well, the of course, if you're going all the way to Tahiti, you're going pretty much anywhere. You have to book a shore excursion because that way you can get off the ship and you can go and experience the culture for yourself and see what there is to do and what there is to enjoy the food and the ambiance of your destination.
Mm-hmm. And why should you book it through the cruise ship as opposed to doing it freelance? Or should you?
Well, I think it's very wise for number one to go through the cruise ship because they're going to make sure you get back on time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get back on time, Deb,
they leave you.
They do.
And rightfully so. Because they have to be somewhere next.
Right.
You know. And not only, you know, are you impacting yourself, but impacting normally hundreds or thousands of other people on the ship.
Depends.
That all got back on time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other big reason I see to book, especially on this particular cruise,
mm-hmm.
is that Windstar has 36 years plus of experience in Tahiti. So in French Polynesia. They know everyone, and it shows.
Yeah.
And the shore excursions are really wonderful. The people that they book them with, I honestly can't say with all the excursions that I did that there was anybody that I would have changed. I mean,
right.
They're so it's all about, like everything else on Earth, connections. And
yep.
They also have done this enough times that they know what works for an excursion and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get on the ship, you know, we should all talk about this. Two things about excursions. Read ahead of time and book your excursions ahead of time so you're not going to be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Because many, many, many times I've been on ships with other people and they're like, oh, the excursion was full.
Yeah.
They offer several different types of excursions on every cruise that I've ever been on. But if you don't book ahead, you do take a chance on missing the excursion that you want to go on.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's very, very wise, and they should heed that. I think that's what we did. We all booked our excursions.
We booked our excursions well in advance.
Well in advance.
Right. I think also you need to pay attention to, and we'll get into the particulars of the different excursions that we went on, but please pay attention to the instructions they give you in the description of each shore excursion. If they tell you it's mild or difficult or lots of walking, cobblestones, whatever they're telling you, they mean it. And a lot of times they may make it sound a little bit harder than it really is in the end, but it's better to me, to really understand your capabilities. Are you able to climb a giant hill or so forth? So read it, pay attention to what they're advising.
So can I tell you a funny story? That's
Please.
Not about this ship.
Okay.
This is a really funny story. I was on a different cruise line in Alaska, and we get, of course, the shore excursions, and it says a 2-mile hike. You know, and I hike, and I, mm-hmm. you know, I'd been actually at the time training once again for the Camino. So it was a 2-mile hike and a rafting trip. But there were big, big, big stars beside it that said, do not do this hike unless you are very fit. We will provide you with poles and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I still said, so the person I was with said, there's no way I could think I could do that. And I said, but I didn't read all the fine print, but it was like 2 miles. I can do 2 miles. Oh my God. Have you ever seen the pictures? in Alaska of the miners where they're all lined up and it's like they're going straight up where the guy's head's in the guy other guy's legs. Right. That straight up.
Yeah.
That was the 2 mile hike.
Oh.
I thought I was going to die. It going up was nothing. The coming down was the part that really got your knees and all that kind of stuff.
I bet.
It was unbelievable. So to prove your point, yes, absolutely. I lived. They didn't have to send, I did, they didn't have to send a helicopter for me, but for 2 days, I could barely walk. So do read. And if you have questions, ask questions.
Right.
You know, that's why they have a shore excursion, a whole desk full of people, experts that can tell you what to do.
Right. And if you don't want to book something and you do want to freelance, it's advisable to talk to them about how to go about that, because they will give you phone numbers of the pier if you're docked. If something comes up, they will give you emergency numbers. They will help you and they will advise you on where, kind of who to trust, I guess, when you get off the ship. These people that are standing around with their cars, maybe it's okay, maybe it's not, but they will advise you. And once again, listen to them. I don't advise doing freelance. I think it's way, way risky.
It is very risky. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, we're going to rent a car, we'll rent scooters, and we'll go and we'll do our own tour.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
I think it depends on anybody that I know that's been successful doing that kind of thing, or booking an excursion that was not associated with a ship, has done a lot of homework before they did it. And they've either booked it at home, again, in advance, and they've done it with someone that they knew had been on the excursion. Or one time we did book a private guide for a day. We booked it through a company that I was familiar with, and I knew people that had gone on this particular excursion. So I have done that.
Right.
But for the most part, it's just advisable. You might think you're saving money, but penny wise and pound foolish.
And do take, and then we'll move on, but do take the emergency numbers with you, because it is possible, rare, but to get separated or to be in a very crowded location where many ships have docked and you could get separated. So, you know, take the ship numbers, how to get in touch with the ship. It's just better to be safe.
Yeah.
And so, I'd say just add on one quick thing too, is that if this is your first time in this port or destination, I would really recommend go on one of the ship excursions.
Yeah.
Familiarize yourself with the port. Maybe next time, you know, you'll do something different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That is the beauty of the shore excursions, because it does let you know what you will maybe want to do next time or not want to do next time. So let's move on into a few of the things we did in French Polynesia. Deb, you did a couple of snorkeling.
I did two snorkeling adventures. The only thing I can say about that is, oh my gosh, you don't ever go to French Polynesia and not snorkel or dive. It's the best experience I've ever had. We snorkeled in 5 different locations for the 2 days that I went. The first day, I was a little iffy when I saw the sharks come to the boat. We swam with sharks, black-tipped sharks and reef sharks. They come right to the boat when the boat stops, and the boat stops at the place where they live, I guess, and they're used to it. Not that, I mean, you know, fish are just not smart, but these fish obviously are smart enough to know to come to the boat. So when you're getting your fins on and your snorkel on, you're looking over the edge, and the sharks are literally just going woo, woo, woo. So when you jump in, they come around you. They surround you. You swim. You can, when you're swimming on top, it's not that much. But if you do, like a lot of people do, which I do when I snorkel, go under, they'll swim right beside you.
That sounds scary to
me. It wasn't really scary. I didn't think they were going to bite me or anything. I mean, but it is kind of fun. So that day was more swimming with the sharks was the beginning. And you would have died when we left, because they don't feed them until you leave. And I guess that's how they get them to come back. So, and they don't bother you while you're swimming. When we were back on the boat before we took off, the guide took a bucket of fish and threw it over, and those sharks were just like,
wow.
You could see them, which was really fun. The second place we went that day was we did a drift snorkel, which a lot of people don't really know what that is. At least people on our excursion didn't. But basically what they do is they put you in the water. They give you a position. And this was, of course, in Tahiti. They are in French Polynesia. There's mountains everywhere. Mm-hmm. So they showed us a mountain and said, if you get off, just raise your head up, look and see, and swim toward this place. First of all, you had to be a really good swimmer to be in this particular excursion, because you swam with the current. And once you jumped in, the reason it was a drift was you drifted as the current drifted.
Okay.
Well, the current changed that day. So we didn't end up exactly where we were supposed to be. And we had to swim to the boat, you know, to get to the boat. And that's when I cut my foot.
Okay.
But anyway, that was really good. Then the other snorkeling trip was on Bora Bora. I heard that snorkeling on Moorea was really, really good too. I did not do that. But the one on Bora Bora, we went to, the first place we went was where the manta rays and the eagle rays were. I've seen eagle rays and manta rays on television.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen them up close and personal. They swim in cold water. They swim in what they call the valleys of the coral reefs. So they have to take you to a place where the manta rays are, the rays are, they're not that many fish. And the manta rays swim right under you, and it looks like they're doing a ballet. Their wingspan can be as big as 12 feet, and it's usually 6 feet. They're huge, huge animals, fish. That was the first thing. Then we went to a place where there were stingrays, which a lot of people have been swimming with stingrays in the, you know, like the Bahamas and places. Stingrays, but the turtles are a different kind of turtle than I'm used to in Galveston, a different kind of, they look different. Obviously, they are different. And there were some sharks the second place. Then it was like being dropped. They took you to the warm part of the reef. The warm part of the reef, the only way I can even describe it is if someone took you and dropped you in an aquarium and there were thousands of fish, every kind of fish you can even imagine, it's swimming around you. And, you know, there were so many fish that delight is the best way I can describe how I felt. The coral reefs over there have not been killed like they have in the Mesoamerican reef. So the coral reefs are pretty neon. I mean, they're pink, yellow, green, you know, all the colors. Wow. The fish are just everywhere. I did see several of the fish that we had for dinner, which made me a little iffy about eating that parrotfish. Because, you know, when they're in the water, they're kind of sweet. But, I was like, oh, I'm going to have you for dinner. I don't know.
When you eat them, they're a little sweet, too.
Yeah. So anyway, that was probably one of the most memorable excursions that I did the whole time I was there, was that particular snorkeling experience. And the boat took us four different places, same reef, but that's a good example of why you would book it through the ship. They have the experience. They know where to take you to see a manta ray. They know where the sharks are safe. They know where the green, and they explain to us. This is another thing I always do, which is, you know how I am. I sometimes will tease the eels. Well, you should not do that. A moray eel will attack you. And for some reason, I have this thing about sticking my hand out for eels. But anyway, they said, do not do that. You know, there are green eels in here and different kinds of eels that do not. And indeed, we did see the green eel. I did not.
You were good.
I did not tempt the green eel to attack me. But anyway, it was very, very good. You're exhausted when you're finished. The other thing I will say is, even though I did put on a lot of sunscreen, as we know, I got sunburned. Because you're laying flat and your back of your legs
exposed.
So, word to the wise, either have someone help you and make sure that you've covered everything.
Yeah.
Because you can't see what you've done.
No, you can't. You know. It's true.
So anyway, it was really, really good. And every one of our guides was wonderful.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about prepping for snorkeling, because you do have to, the ship will provide you with the gear, but you do have to reserve that early?
You have to reserve it, and actually, my snorkel did not work. It was filling with water, so I had to get one from the ship, from the boat when we went out the first time. So that's the one I use the rest of the time. So I would say, this is what I would say. If you really, really, really want to snorkel and you know ahead of time, I didn't want to take up the space in the luggage. It would have been worth it to take up the space in the luggage.
Okay.
I would take my own.
Oh, good advice.
Okay. At least my own snorkel and mask, and then you get the fins from the ship, because the fins are what take up the most room. But I would take my own. From now on, I will take my own snorkel and mask. You know. The other thing, as far as prepping, all French Polynesia, which you're not supposed to do it anywhere in the water anymore, requires that you use the sunscreen that's sustainable and ocean friendly.
Right. That is really important.
And it's very important, because you do not want to kill those coral reefs.
No, you do not.
And it's very, very important. So they did, I will say this, on both snorkeling trips I was on, they were required, if you were putting on sunscreen, to look at your sunscreen.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that, actually, because we need to be careful.
Yeah.
We need to protect everything.
And even the ship, Windstar, does have a program for sustainability of the coral reefs that they allow you to donate to.
They do. That's true. Thanks for bringing that up. So, okay, Gary, do you have a favorite one you want to talk about, or...
Well, I think, you know, for us, and we went on this together, at the island of Huaheine, is that
Huaheine, yeah.
Huaheine, and it's one of the least developed of the islands.
The least developed of the bigger, you know, Huaheine's small, but yeah.
No resorts.
No resorts, no hotels, and from what I could see, hardly any Airbnbs, and, you know, virtually, it was hardly at all developed at all.
So we took a tour there that started out, we went from the ship, tendered over to a dock, and then when our group got together, then we got on a kind of a large outrigger, and they took us to one of the motus, which is one of the little islands, and most of them are little private islands, but so we went, and the waters were just spectacular. I mean, you can't imagine the blueness of the water and all the hues of blue. And our guide was a native, of course, Tahitian, that obviously knew his way around all the islands, and had little tropical flowers on the outrigger. And so we took us over there. After a ride, and then we had a picnic, didn't we?
We did. We did. The picnic tables were in the water, and not so far in the water where the benches were covered up, but close. That you would sit on the bench of the table, and your legs were in the water with all these little bitty fish swimming all around your feet, and the water was crystal clear. I mean, you could see every little grain of sand. It was so wonderful. And we had lunch there. Our guide made, we got to watch all the process of making the tuna. It was tuna ceviche. And it was the best I've ever had, and it was fun to see how he did it, the things that he included, and how the process worked. And then we had, you know, the other items for the picnic.
And then whatever we had left over in the plate, he told us to put in the water.
Yeah,
for the fish. The fish.
Yeah.
And feed the fish.
The leftovers went into the water.
And they very much appreciated it.
Yeah.
And then we walked over to the other side of this little island, and it was a very pretty beach, you know, not huge.
Yeah, they had developed a little kind of a little picnic with lounge chairs, mm-hmm. and areas where you could relax. And some of our group went out and went swimming and mm-hmm. went snorkeling in the water.
What did they say about the snorkeling as far as what they saw?
Oh, you know what? We really didn't talk to them about that.
No, we didn't.
The only thing that was really fun for me, and I have a photo of it, one of the people had a little tiny little bitty crab. I mean, it was like the tiniest little crab. And she came up to me, and she's like, "You want to see?" And she put it on her finger, and the little claws came out. And so, tiniest. I mean, it was the tiniest little thing. But mostly, you know, people were walking back, and it was just this beautiful day. Everybody was pretty chill, quiet. No one was, it was just relaxing. It was just a very, very relaxing time, I thought. And then we got back on the boat, the outrigger, and went to another spot where people could snorkel.
Snorkel as well.
Yeah. And it was just peaceful and quiet, and I mean, even the people on the tour, everybody was just chill. It was a small tour. There weren't all that many people on it at all. Probably what, maybe 15?
Yeah, people? If that many.
Yeah, yeah, it was very, very small. Yeah, I bet it wasn't.
And then our captain, you know, on the way over, we played the ukulele and sang Tahitian songs.
Oh, fun.
And then when we got there, he showed us how they do the kind of basket weaving. And he took those palm mm-hmm. things, mm-hmm. And boy, he just stitched them together
made
quick.
These beautiful baskets
yeah.
right there in the boat.
Yeah.
So it was just a very, very relaxing kind of
One of the tours Gary and I took together that you stayed in Chile.
I was by the pool.
The very first day, we were in Mo'orea.
Mo'orea.
And we went with a professional photographer who had lived in the States for a while, but was a very well-known photographer and published and all that. And she had returned, if you remember the story, she had returned to Mo'orea to be with her family. Mm-hmm. We heard that a lot. A lot of the people that had lived in the United States and gone to school in the United States were Europe. France, a lot of them in France, had come back to take care of their family members. And she took us to maybe five spots, different spots, and showed us places that we could take photographs. But not only that, pointed out things, different ways.
And gave us photos. On how to improve your photos. And like one stop was a public beach, and she showed how you can incorporate palm trees and make it interesting, more interesting than just a regular snapshot.
Some of my prettiest pictures are from that beach.
And then we saw a very old Catholic church.
It was Protestant.
Oh, it was a Protestant church.
It was a Protestant church.
Okay.
Yes, it was an Anglican church. Because remember, they're called the Society Islands because came to convert. And actually, the conversion, from what she said and from what I read, was huge. There are many, many, many Protestants as well as Catholics. The French brought the Catholics. The British brought the Protestants. And in that particular church, which was very, very, very interesting, they had an altar that had been carved by people on Easter Island, remember?
Uh-huh.
And it was the same kind of lava rock. But it was also the same kind of things that you would see on Easter Island as far as the symbols and the faces and things like that. And that was, it was really funny. It was combining the native culture, I think, in the background was a grotto that you had with Mary, a clam, you know, thing mm-hmm. with Mary.
Okay.
So it was really, really interesting. It sat in a really beautiful kind of a valley, I guess, between two mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And it was gorgeous. It was built in the 1700s, the church?
Early 1800s? That sounds right, yeah.
It was old.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Then we went to the Belvedere. We went up to the top of the mountain.
The highest point on Moray.
The highest point on Moray, where you can see. I didn't know this until we stayed there. It didn't sink in when she was telling us. Did you know what we were seeing? Cook's Bay and Apahano Bay, or the other side, where we went. Both places where we went when we went back to Moray.
You could see our ship. anchored there, and then you could see the Paul Gauguin ship
in the other bay.
It was really cool, and then we went to a pineapple plantation.
I didn't realize that they were so big into horses either. There were a lot of horses. There was a big horse farm on that island.
So it was a really really good tour overview of Moorea.
I thought so too. I think that's really good pointers for you guys to have, because the whole area, each and every one of the stops we made the whole time we were there, all you can do is snap photos, because it's so beautiful, and there the flowers and the water and just constantly. So to have tips on how to make them better, That's going to be a good tour for people.
And then you can't talk about excursions without talking about Pearl Farms.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
It was what?
Raiatea. In fact, you could have gone to a Pearl Farm on any of them.
Right. They all had
Farms. Every stop had an excursion that included a Pearl Farm. Some of them, and I didn't do it, but I heard the family that had the children did this. You can dive for your own pearl, you can, and it's shallow. When you get there, you see how they do it. When it says a pearl farm, I was kind of like, what is that? How do you do that? Well, they're in nets and they pull them up, but learning about how they culture them, you realize why and how many one in a million is the perfect one or whatever. You understand why they're so expensive.
Yeah.
Because it takes years.
Years. Yeah. And it also takes an expert. Every single pearl farm that we went to, they said, she's the one that does the culturing, tending to these pearls. And it depends a lot on the water temperature. If the water temperature changes what did they say, 4 years or something before they can get one
is 4.
Yeah.
In between those 4 years, if the water temperature gets real warm, that's how they go from being round to Baroque. They won't stay around. The Pearl Farms, and it's all mom and pop. We didn't see one large-scale operation the whole time we were there.
No, we didn't.
And I don't believe there is one. There's one family on Bora Bora that supposedly, or maybe it was Moreo, that owns a lot of those Pearl Farms. But they're still operated by families.
Yeah.
Family
it's
groups.
Not like a machine of, we're manufacturing these things. It's
In Japan, there are large operations that they own much, much bigger spaces, and it's a different way of doing it. But still, cultured pearls, but different.
But that's a big part of it, I think.
Definitely.
Pearls. Yeah.
And speaking of Bora Bora, on that particular tour, we stopped at a textile place where they were doing the
boutique
pareos.
Yeah, and the pareos and you guys
jewelry.
Went shopping.
Yeah, they had jewelry.
Yeah, and they're very well known for these pareos. And
this is where you want to make sure you have the local money.
Local currency, that's, right.
Yeah, that's what you need to have. Because
that it wouldn't take dollars?
Your credit card. Well, they wanted their money, so I don't know.
They did want their money, so they didn't have to convert it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so. the one thing I will say about all the excursions, again, and all the islands, beyond the snorkel, it's so funny because we're saying you can go to a pearl farm on every island, you can snorkel on every island. The third thing you can do on every island is you can visit artisan-made crafts.
Yes, you can.
I mean, and in almost every one, you'll come to a place, particularly in the ports, where they have really nice jewelry that, mm-hmm. that are artisan-made jewelry, artisan-made fabrics, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would say support the local culture.
I totally agree with that.
We did.
We try to do that. we did a good job of that.
Yeah, you did.
So, this is our podcast about shore excursions. So is there anything else before we wrap this up that you guys want to add?
I think just a quick note that the Tahitian people really honor their culture and they honor their history.
They do.
There's, you know, you'll find a lot of archaeological sites around, scattered around the islands. And
we did go to the one UNESCO World Heritage site.
Yes,
we all went
to Raiatea.
That on Raiatea. And they did give us a lot of history. The islands aren't that old as far as human occupation, which was very interesting because they came obviously from Hawaii down, and that's, you know, that's how they got there. But I guess the thing to say as far as the excursions is, almost every excursion that I went on, in fact every excursion I went on, was a native guide. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're on cruises in Europe and wherever you are, United States as well, they're not all native guides. You know, they don't all, they're people, a lot of times, especially in Europe, they're people that have moved there and granted lived there, but these were people that were born and raised in Tahiti and lived there. And as the one person told us, I was born here, I'll die here.
Right.
And that makes a difference,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it does.
They're cultural ambassadors.
They are. And they're, the most warm and welcoming people you'd ever want to meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, they are. I just want to add, before we wrap this up, to, as a passenger and as a visitor to wherever you travel, whether it's French Polynesia or any place else, to be respectful. To be respectful of the people, of the place you're visiting. And be respectful if it's a cruise that you happen to be on, like this that we're talking about. Be respectful of your fellow passengers. And when you end the ship, and when you are off the ship, behave accordingly. And when it is time to be back on board, they make it very, very clear when it's time to be back on the ship.
I thought you were talking about when you are in a group, please allow other people to take photos.
Well,
don't elbow your way in front of everybody and push people out of the way, because it happens sometimes. And it's, you know, etiquette. You are really wonderful about etiquette. I tend to be a little more direct about some things. But sometimes, to be honest, you have to say something.
You do. And being respectful, understanding everyone wants to get that great shot. But get back to the ship when you're supposed to, because it isn't fair to anyone, to your fellow passengers. And it seems like that's popping up in the news more and more and more, where people are not getting back. They make it clear. It's in every printed item. It's on apps. It's posted. When you get on and off the ship, it's clear. They make an announcement about it when you have to be back on board. Respect that. Have respect when you travel for just the goodness of making travel better.
Which is another reason to take the excursions that are whatever from the ship that are,
right,
you know.
Yeah, let's be good ambassadors as travelers for each other out there in the world, for our fellow man and woman out there. I think that's important. And I think the more you travel, the more you find how necessary that is. So
amen.
All right, well, thank you both very much for being here.
Happy to join you.
Thank you so much. And I hope that you will go back and listen to the other one about French Polynesia if you didn't already, here on Travel Bistro. Don't forget my other podcast, Gigi and the 561. Be sure to check that out. Gary writes for All Things Cruise and Splash Magazine Worldwide. So you can, it's G-E-R-R-Y, but it's pronounced Gary. So please look him up, as well as on NorthPalmBeachLife.com. Our YouTube channel is the same name, NorthPalmBeachLife.com. Don't forget my books. They're on Amazon.com. So go check out my novels And Deborah, tell us where we can find you.
It's Deborah Hamilton Lynn at foundingaustin.com, as well as sometimes USA Today 10 Best, as well as 365portsofcall.com.
Okay, very good. And if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably through email. It's dhamiltonlynne, L-Y-N-N-E, at gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. So if you want to know more about her snorkeling or have any questions for her, and you can contact us through our website, northpalmbeachlife.com. These podcasts always rest on northpalmbeachlife.com, as well as 20 other platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, and Pandora. So please listen in, and I thank you for being here. We thank you for being here with us today, listening in, as we take you along on our travels on Travel Bistro. Stay with us and come back.